I'm going to hand it over to Julie.
Hello. So today, you're listening, by the way, to Reality Sandwich Radio. This is KPOO San Francisco. And every Thursday, by the way, if you miss a show or you want to get back copies of any of our shows, you can always go to our website, realitysandwichradio.com, and download the shows for free and listen to them or share them with your friends. So I'm pretty sure that today is the day that you are going to want to do that because we have a great guest on. We are going to be talking about the subject of raw dairy, and in a minute I will have Martin introduce our guest for the day. But just to give you a sense, we're going to be talking about raw milk and raw dairy products and how they differ from conventional milk and even organic milk. And so we're going to be talking all about the health issues, safety, as well as all sorts of wonderful information from the farmer himself on how to do this healthfully. So we have Mark McAfee on today.
Mark is the owner of Organic Pastures. You can get it at organicpastures.com. And you'll be able to get a lot of the information that we'll be speaking about today. But for the past 6 years, distributing milk products all throughout California, absolutely yummy, delicious, and healthy. Is Mark on the line?
Let's see if we can get him on. Mark, are you there?
I sure am. Good morning, Julie.
Hi, Mark. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
So we know Mark because we've been drinking his milk for a long time, and we've heard him speak before, and we wanted to have him on the show because there are so many people that are always asking us questions as to what is this raw milk thing. And so I thought we would go right to the source and hear it from you. So maybe you can tell us just a little bit about Organic Pastures and your dairy and some of the basics on why you started it to begin with.
Absolutely. We are a grass-fed organic dairy in near Fresno, California. We milk about 320 cows, and we started in about 2000 or so, year 2000, supplying milk to Organic Valley. And the milk we were sending off in trucks to Organic Valley was being ultra-high temperature pasteurized and homogenized and conventionally processed, but it was organic milk that ended up on a shelf someplace at a store near you. And we were not connected to the consumer. Well, it just was very interesting. Within literally a few weeks and a month or so of startup, we had people arriving at our dairy in minivans and in Suburban saying, fill up the ice chest. We want as many of your gallons of milk as possible. Please don't pasteurize our milk. We want our milk raw and from the grass-fed organic cows.
Hmm.
And so they brought the message to us, and that's how we kind of started.
Wow. And so there's maybe we should talk about what raw milk is basically unpasteurized and unadulterated milk, milks that came straight from the cow, more or less. And it's funny that 60 Minutes, Andy Rooney had an interesting story on, was it last night, about wanting his milk straight from the cow?
Yeah. I've got his notes right here in front of me. It's a very powerful message. It's, why can't we get our kids to drink the milk anymore? And he's making the point that it's not milk anymore. It's everything but milk. And he's basically saying if the dairy producers want to get more money for the milk and the consumers want to drink delicious milk, why don't they just go get the milk that came from the cow instead of trying to process it?
Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about that history just briefly because milk's obviously it's a huge, huge industry. It's, you know, one of the things that our government says that everybody should be drinking. And one of many things that the public is unaware, as you say, has become anything but milk, something that was originally happy and healthy and good for us, yet over the years has really changed into a quite different end product for many different reasons. And so what's the difference between that milk that we're now getting in the stores, mass-produced, and milk that we all knew historically as being happy, you know, really good and healthy for us?
Well, that's a very good question. For literally thousands and thousands of years, milk has been a very, very short food chain. You get it from the cow and you drink it. You get it from the cow, you make cheese or butter. You get it from the cow directly and you eat it. Well, in the last 120 years since the late 1800s, that's all taken a dramatic detour in this country. In other countries, it's still, many countries, a very, very short food chain. You go to the backyard and you milk the goat and you get the milk and that's it. But when you have a very, very short food chain, you cannot capitalize on that milk commercially. You can't put that milk together with other dairies. You can't distribute it far and wide because guess what? The farmer owns his own milk or the local community owns their own milk. In the last 120 years, since the commercialization of milk, there's been just a disaster in the whole entire milk market because as you extend shelf life as you process the milk, as you distribute the milk, and you commingle the milk amongst many, many dairies into one big creamery or many, you know, big creameries across this country, you then have the good, bad, and the ugly coming together. Some of the dairymen do a great job. No antibiotics, grass feeding, wonderful clean milk with low bacteria counts and all the enzymes, everything functioning like Mother Nature designed it. No problem. But they're commingling that milk with milk coming from a factory farm, per se. Let's say a cow that's standing in a lot of manure and concrete and antibiotics and hormones and not a stitch of grass and lots of grain. And those cows are producing pathogens in their milk. University of Davis has found that 31% of conventional milk tanks in California had a human pathogen present. So we have this untold story of milk here, the milk coming from an organically produced, grass-fed, all-natural kind of condition, which is the way it's been for all time in a safe manner, is being buried by the current paradigm, which is commercialization of milk, which has a disastrous food safety history.
Mm. Well, what's the deal with pasteurization? I mean, why does that? I'm a layperson. I mean, I love the product. I like milk. I want to eat things that make me healthy. And when did pasteurization come in, and what does that actually do?
Well, pasteurization was invented by Mr. Louis Pasteur in France to stabilize beer and wine. And it's interesting to note that wine is no longer pasteurized. it was a situation where yeast was growing in the wines and beers, and they wanted to stop the yeast growing, so they used pasteurization, which is a heating process to kill those yeast. However, in the United States, there was disasters in New York and Boston and many of the big cities in the Eastern Seaboard during the rum embargo of the late 1800s and the mid-1800s with Jamaica. And as a result, we were making our own rum here in the United States, and the distilleries were creating what's called distiller's grain or distiller's mash and feeding it to these cows in confinement, tied-up stanchion-type environments where the cows were never on a green grass pasture in downtown dairies. And as a result, it was a putrid, terrible environment where the cows were malnourished, literally drunk on brewer's distillery mash, and the milk they were producing didn't even have very much butterfat. And many, many children died from drinking that milk. It was filled with all kinds of pathogens, including TB, brucellosis, undulant fever. There was other diseases associated with the milking process and the fact that there were no milking machines, no cleansers, no hot water, no stainless steel, no rubber hoses. There was flies everywhere from... you know, the horses running down the streets and leaving their manure everywhere. There was no sanitation. The outhouse situation was horrible. So during that crisis, a Mr. Strauss brought in the pasteurization process, and they had these downtown milk depots where they would pasteurize the milk, and literally overnight, many children stopped dying. They still had big problems with pasteurization for the next 20 or 30 years until they figured it out, but for the time being, it was basically heralded as the breakthrough of the century because people could drink milk from unsanitary conditions, and they would be okay. The untold story of milk at that time was that out in the pastures in Pennsylvania, with the Amish or whoever was running their cows around in green grass pasture, that milk was being taken to the Mayo Clinic and used to cure a whole bunch of diseases. So nobody talked about that because it was not commercially viable because the farmers are making the money, not a creamery. So it literally, every time we look at the history, we get a real interesting a sense of where you go, you find the money, you find the problem.
So let's make a distinction between the, I guess, three main types of milk out there so that people can understand what kind they're drinking. So there's raw milk, which is what we're talking about and what you produce. There's conventional milk, which is... non-organic, it's pasteurized, homogenized, all sorts of stuff, and fed antibiotics and all that. And then there's organic milk, which is, my understanding, uses many of the same conventional milk production methods, but they're fed organic feed and they're not given antibiotics and things.
Julie, I think you said it all right there in the three categories of milk. There's raw milk, there's conventional raw milk, and there's organic raw milk. Those are the three kinds of milk you'll find on a dairy. The processing step is the real big issue here. Now, I agree with the FDA that raw milk can be very unsafe when coming from a conventional type system, which has 31% of the time a human pathogen present. However, raw milk coming from a grass-fed organic type environment generally does not have pathogens. And in our environment, where we intensively test and use all organic type natural systems, we've never had a pathogen ever detected in 1,300 tests and 40 million servings over the last 6 years. The differences between those milks are basically this. Conventional milk is produced in a conventional, generally a factory farm type set of conditions, which is pretty much all artificial without any grass access. There are some exceptions to that, but for the most part, all artificial with antibiotics, hormones, lots of grain, and not a stitch of grass on a big pile of manure. And the cows live about 3.5 years and get sent off to ground beef. Organic milk generally comes from either a grass-fed farm or a factory farm. The organic standards were changed last year to permit the allowance of no pasture access for cows. So you can have a conventional type factory farm environment where the cows are fed organic feed and not given antibiotics or hormones, and they will call that organic milk, which is not really organic milk if you think about it, because a cow is intended to be on a grass pasture to get the basis of their nutrition to be fed. But nonetheless, that's considered to be organic. Then there's raw milk that is from an organic type environment with grass feeding that's never processed. And we're talking about what Andy Rooney was talking about. We're talking about cows that are happy on grass fields producing milk, and then it's not ever processed. We're talking about milk right direct, straight from the cow, as natural as it could ever be, from the natural setting it's ever been. That's basically the story.
I'm fascinated by this, and I'm wondering, as any milk drinker listening in, what are some of the major myths otherwise regarding milk that's out there? Because I see all these ads, right? Got milk does a body good. Is that really true? I mean,
the milk industry has capitalized on the 10,000 year history of the goodwill of milk from cows. And what this happened is, there's been about 4 or 5 generations since people really knew where milk comes from. You ask anybody and ask them, where do you get your milk? From a shelf in a store? And that's literally the truth. People don't know where their milk comes from. Or if they see an advertisement, they see cows talking in English to each other in some kind of a joking fashion about the weather or the sun or other animals on a green grass pasture. They're totally clean and totally happy. So they don't know where their milk comes from. And that's the sad part, because the milk industry tells them the story that they want them to hear. And as a result, people's minds are all twisted around, don't understand the truth.
Mark, I have to say that we have this book. It's actually not related to milk at all, but it's called Earth from Above, and it has all these pictures of kind of what you can see from far, far away. And there's this picture of this building that looks like a parking garage, and then you look closer, and it's about 7 stories of concrete with dairy cows living on it. It's in Japan, and it just really brought home for me that there is no difference between in Japan, where they don't have any land, having the cows in basically a parking garage versus having them in a dairy where they still have no access to the sunlight, no access to the outside. It's really shocking when you think about it or when you see it, because like you said, that's not the image that we imagine that's happening here. And I think most people don't understand the huge difference in the quality or the health of the milk from one milk to another.
We have to really step back a moment here and look at something. Look at the American, look at most first world diets. The standard American diet, or the SAD diet, the SAD diet, is a sterile diet. It's a diet that's based on long shelf life preserved foods. These foods are literally devoid of enzymes, and they're devoid of bacterial activity. Our bodies need to have active enzymes and need to have a diversity, and I emphasize the word diversity here. I can't overemphasize the word diversity. It's so important. Diversity of different kinds of active living bacteria for our digestive tract to function properly. If we do not have a diversity of bacteria functioning in our intestinal tract, we will become subject to immune depression and degenerative diseases. The diversity of bacteria that reside in our intestines are responsible for a diversity of different kinds of physiological symbiotic relationship interactions with our bodies. And without them, we would not have the building blocks we need for things like neurotransmitters, all kinds of building blocks we need to actually function as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
We in this country are suffering a plague of immune depression, compromised by not only by the fact that we have sterile foods in our diet, but the fact that we have preservatives in that food, and we're also taking antibiotics like candy, and as a result, killing off the balance of good bacteria and setting up these monocultures of sometimes bad bacteria and sometimes the bacteria that aren't the meaningful bacteria that actually support the building blocks of life that we need to live and be healthy.
Mm.
There are university studies coming out all over the place that are supporting this. Gut Flora Great is a great article came out. Dr. John Gordon, or Jeff Gordon, the work's being done right now at UCSF in San Francisco. They're talking about they're giving children lactobacillus bacteria and finding that, guess what, it prevents asthma in children that are very at risk for asthma. They both have asthmatic parents.
Mm.
Guess what? These bacteria come from raw milk. Lactobacillus bacteria is a fundamental milk that's just bacteria that's destroyed in pasteurization.
Mm.
So, you know, the more we get away from Mother Nature, the more we find that little pieces of this Mother Nature are critical to our life. And modern medicine and modern food companies are trying to say, oh, what part of Mother Nature do we need to add back in as some kind of a medicine, versus just saying, listen, guys, we need the whole food.
Mm-hmm.
The whole food has all the good stuff in it. So we're missing the boat here by going out and trying to find a bunch of pills and bottles and supporting drug companies. What we should do is go find the local dairyman or the local farmer, the local egg producer, and shorten the food chain, get close to them, and make sure we have whole foods.
So let's talk about the nutrition piece of it a little bit more, and then I definitely, of course, want to talk about safety because that's everybody's
sure.
biggest concern.
Absolutely.
So with the nutrition aspect of it, so you've mentioned already that it's got all of these enzymes. It has the good bacteria that we need. Also, the pasteurization process kills a lot of the good vitamins, right? The vitamin A, the B vitamins, vitamin C. What am I missing?
Well, what pasteurization does is makes what vitamins there are there in the milk less available.
Mm.
There may be some vitamins there. I mean, the pasteurization has literally no effect on some vitamins and 80% effect on other vitamins. But what the overall effect is it limits the ability for them to be absorbed and utilized.
Mm.
It's not that, you know, you can you eat a ball bearing, you're going to get iron in your diet. No, it's going to go out the other end, you know. You have to have the availability of these nutrients in order for our body to metabolize and utilize them.
That's
so critical.
So let's talk a minute about enzymes, because I think this gets away from a lot of people. So there's lipase in the milk, which breaks down the fats and helps the fats to be more
yes.
utilized and better digested.
Yes.
Digested. The lactase, which a lot of people are lactose intolerant, tell me if I'm correct. This is actually not necessarily in the milk, but created by the bacteria in the milk. Is that correct?
In the early days, people said, oh, there's plenty of lactase in milk, in raw milk. That's why we don't have lactose intolerance associated with raw milk. And that's not really true. It's actually one off from that. The lactobacillus bacteria we talked about earlier is in the milk, which in the presence of heat and time and lactose creates lactase enzymes in your intestines.
Hmm.
So the presence of the lactobacillus bacteria actually promotes the growth creation of lactase enzyme, which then helps digest the lactose sugar. So the lactobacillus is actually the active bacteria which does that.
So for people, to translate that to people that are listening, people that might be, quote, lactose intolerant to pasteurized dairy are very typically not lactose intolerant to raw dairy because it's got the enzyme needed to break the lactose down.
Correct. Now, you'll find a gross exception, I mean, maybe 1 in 1,000 people, literally, it's been that few people, have some kind of an ultra-sensitivity to lactose or an ultra-sensitivity to casein,
mm-hmm.
which makes them just not able to drink any kind of milk.
Right.
But that's the gross exception. 99% of the people that have lactose intolerance do great on raw milk.
Let's talk about that casein, because I have a lot of clients that are very, very sensitive on the autistic spectrum, very sensitive to the casein molecule. And so for people out there, I wanted to kind of discuss this a little bit. My experience, and I'll be curious of what you've heard, because you probably come across a lot more people than I do, is that for some people, like you said, the casein is the protein or one of the proteins in the milk. They're just sensitive to it, and it doesn't matter. They have a challenge with it. But interestingly, there is a big group, I feel, of people in between that might have an imbalanced gut right now so that they can't necessarily have it. But once the gut's healed up, then raw milk is something that they are able to consume, either right now or after some work on their digestive system. And I'm curious your knowledge on that.
I've had a very similar experience, and that is that those that have gone down the path of literally sterilizing their gut, they've got a leaky gut syndrome going on, they've got Crohn's, IBS, colitis, all kinds of problems with irritability in their intestines, need to take a little bit of time to go back down the pathway to health. They can't expect miracles overnight. And, you know, Jordan Rubin, who wrote The Maker's Diet, strongly suggests the use of kefir. A raw milk kefir as one of the first things to kind of go back down the path, because it has a diversity of good bacteria, all the enzymes, and very, very high bacteria counts, but a very broad diversity, including yeast, they're beneficial. And very little lactose, because they all got pre-digested in the culturing process.
Right.
So it's an excellent healing mechanism as a first step back into, you know, healing up the gut. Casein in raw form is actually different than in pasteurized form. When you take casein out of its natural whole environment and you put it into a superheated environment without all the bacteria and enzymes accompanying it, it does have a real challenge. Most people have a much easier time of digesting casein in the raw form than in the heated processed form. But we still do have some people that are sensitive to casein and actually have to go and eat a kefir, which is raw milk that's been cultured, in order to actually digest it, and then after a while, they're fine. But it takes, you know, it's baby steps back down the path. Don't expect miracles overnight.
Right, right. And unfortunately, in, I don't know if it's only California, but, you know, there's certain restrictions around. You can't make yogurt with raw milk, and you can't make kefir, unless you make it at home yourself, which is what I teach people how to do, but that you actually can't, for the most part, buy them in the grocery store. Is that accurate?
That's absolutely correct. We make a raw kefir, but we had to make a deal with the state of California and the Department of Health Services. And what we make is a dietary supplement that contains small amounts of colostrum in it. So it's raw milk and colostrum together, taken from cows within 6 days of them calving. So it's mostly raw milk, but it has some kefir, some colostrum in it. So it's no longer considered a dairy product. It's now a dietary supplement product, although it's 99% dairy. It's a loophole in the law. And then we're able to make a kefir, and we can't spell it K-E-F-I-R. We have to spell it Q-E-P-H-O-R, because the laws around dairy are so strict and so onerous that anytime you spell something that meets the standard of identity for a recognized pasteurized product, you've just violated the law. So we've gotten around that by kind of finding loopholes in the way we name things and the way we do things, so that we can satisfy the consumer demand for this health, this extremely healthful food.
Right. So let's talk the last enzyme I want to mention, because I think this is the one a lot of people have never heard of, which is phosphatase.
Ah, now you're getting to be radical, too.
I like that.
Good for you.
So, you know, everybody has been told you have osteoporosis, drink milk, eat cheese. Now, this phosphatase enzyme is not present in pasteurized dairy foods. So tell us why this phosphatase is so important.
This is really, 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 really big time. The negative phosphatase or negative alpha phosphatase test is the test that's used in pasteurization when you're in a big pasteurized plant to test to see whether your milk has been heated to the correct heat, which is an indicator that you've actually pasteurized the milk. And phosphatase is the enzyme which they test for to make sure it's all gone, it's completely absent. Well, unfortunately, in people that suffer osteoporosis, guess what? They do not have a bunch of phosphatase enzyme laying around extra in their body. And when they drink pasteurized milk, that calcium is not available to them and does not go and get deposited into their bone, and their osteoblasts do not increase in size, and guess what? They suffer bone depletion. We know this because we've seen people that have come to our dairy, and literally hundreds of people in the last few years have said that they've had bone loss year after year after year after drinking milk and drinking drinking calcium supplements and all kinds of stuff, and it simply does not go to their bones. It's not physiologically utilizable. But when they start drinking raw milk that has plenty of calcium and the phosphatase enzyme, their bone density within a year starts to climb. And this is radical because the milk industry has an FDA-approved food claim which says that milk will improve people with osteoporosis, will increase bone density, when in fact it will not if you suffer osteoporosis. It may if you don't, because you still have some phosphatase laying around. But if you don't have the phosphatase enzyme, you can't put it in your bones and keep it there.
So this phosphatase enzyme, for people that are out there, is one of the purposes of this enzyme is to help with the absorption of the calcium in the milk.
Absolutely. And it defines milk as a whole food. Hmm. In other words, it doesn't have any missing little parts. It's got everything necessary for your body to fully utilize it. Milk is a miracle food sent by God knows who created it over evolution of a million years or, you know, well, whatever you believe. Mother Nature had her blueprint straight.
Right.
And raw milk is a right-on food if you want to live a long time in this world because it has all the necessary things to have a strong immune system and a strong framework for your body in raw form from naturally fed cows.
Yeah, I always find it fascinating that a food will have all the factors necessary for the absorption of that food.
There's a story about a guy who burned his esophagus by accidentally drinking some lye when he was a child. And he survived for 50 years on nothing but raw milk.
Wow.
That's it. That describes a whole food in its most basic form. I mean, need you say more?
Wow. And just for people that are listening, there's also a much higher ratio of good fats. There's something called CLA that's in raw milk, which is which helps for many things, including fat burning. There's a much higher ratio of omega-3s. When you look at the butter and you look at the product, it's much more yellow or orange in color than the stripped white that you get of regular milk. So for people that are out there listening, there's more vitamins, there's more minerals, there's more enzymes available for the absorption of these things, and the list goes on and on.
Yep.
So let's talk a little bit about safety, because I think that's where we lose people.
I agree 100%, Julie. I was down at Apple Computer on Friday afternoon at the cafeteria, and if there's not a brain trust in this world, it's got to be at Apple Computer. Those are the minds of Steve Jobs and all those guys are just absolutely brilliant. And it was interesting to see a broad section of literally 300 people come through because we were making smoothies with our probiotic kefir base and then adding these wonderful fruits in there and grinding it all up and giving it to people.
Mm.
And the reactions we had from many of the people was, oh, my God, living bacteria? Oh, it's got to be pasteurized.
Mm-hmm.
And then the reaction from some of the people who are really into health food saying, oh, my God, probiotics, I love it, I love it. And it's literally the story we see across the broad spectrum of all consumers is, for the most part, the majority of consumers in this country have been brainwashed,
mm-hmm.
falsely so, into believing that bacteria are our enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And we must, it's imperative, if we want to live and not have degenerative diseases, we must find sources of good probiotic bacteria and the foods that feed them, or we're going to all have short, ugly lives.
Right.
And it's really sad. And I was wanting to just reach out and kiss and hug and shake them to try to say, you've got to understand, look at these university studies. Look at where our immune depression is coming from. Look at what antibiotics are doing with antibiotic-resistant bacteria. They're killing hundreds of thousands of people a year in hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
Look at where the origin of life is. It's microscopic.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't understand the internal ecosystem juxtaposed in relationship to the external ecosystem. And we don't live in a vacuum. We live as a companion symbiotically with good bacteria. It is the why how we live.
Right. And go ahead.
And so anyway, bottom line is people are scared to death of good bacteria. We have to change their mindset.
Mm-hmm.
They have to find good bacteria and eat as much as possible. That's why babies put everything in their mouth. Mm-hmm. They're trying to sample the external environment so that they can imprint themselves for life and have a good immune system experience.
Right, right. For those people that are just tuning in, you are listening to Reality Sandwich Radio and KPOO San Francisco, and we're talking to Mark McAfee about raw milk.
So before we jump into the some of the virtues and the safety factors with regard to raw milk, I'm just getting a quick summarization here. Everything can be called milk, anything that you know, is white and comes from a cow, whether it's conventional or not. But this conventional milk stuff has been highly pasteurized, meaning it's been heated to a very high temperature, which kills essentially anything that's living in it. Is that right? Right?
It's not completely sterilized, although some of the techniques do extend shelf life out and sterilize it. That's the stuff that you do in Europe, the pomelate process, the ESL, the extended shelf life. But for the most part, it reduces the bacteria counts to a low level, injures the bacteria, so they don't want to live, and then also morphs the proteins into weird shapes, and also they go through different processes. But yeah, for the most part, it really kills the milk big time.
So the product that ends up on the shelf for a couple bucks a gallon in whatever store it is really quite different than historically what milk has been, and that milk that milk that has all those good qualities that what I believe I'm getting when I, you know, correlate milk and being healthy, right? It's a completely different ballgame.
Completely different ballgame. Completely different county and country. I mean, it's almost a different reality. I mean, it's just a different world.
And that's precisely what we talk about on Reality Sandwich, is helping people to understand what has happened with a huge industry. And in this case, clearly the public has been sold this notion that pasteurization is good, or that all their products should be sterile, or that any microorganisms or any bacteria is bad for them, and that the this has been sold to them through mass media, through government propaganda, that has been influenced by the companies selling this product.
Well, Martin, you know what? Right now is the lowest all-time milk prices being paid. It's at $10 to $11 per hundredweight right now. Bankruptcies are looming all over the place on conventional dairies. And the consumers don't want to buy the milk.
It's, you know, it's always interesting to me that when people say, oh, raw milk is so expensive. And then I say, but is it expensive, or are you just used to the really cheap stuff? And if it's really cheap, how do they make it so cheap?
You got it.
And that's a big, big question for people to begin to ask themselves, is how does that massively produced stuff that is completely devoid of any nutrients or anything good for me get so cheap? And if so,
well said.
Is that what I want to have going on with my body? Now, we're just here to talk about the truth, lay out some additional options and reality for people, and hence this subject of really going way back in time and understanding what is raw, real good milk about. It is available, and it is safe. So let's talk about the safety factors.
Right. So you were talking about the bacteria, and just for people that are out there, we have more bacteria in our gut than we have cells in our body. About 30% of the weight or the bulk of stool is bacteria, and that seems really, for whatever reason, people are really squeamish about bacteria, but literally we would not be alive. Good bacteria helps us to create, it actually makes vitamins. It actually can convert one nutrient to another. Yeah. It can create all sorts of enzymes. It has immune system complexes, all these kinds of things. And so when we're talking about bacteria, we really have to separate bacteria that's beneficial and that actually assists us with life, and bacteria that's harmful. So the good bacteria that we live harmoniously with, like the yogurt bacteria, the lactobacillus, and the things that are in raw milk, those bacteria actually help to kill the things that are harmful to us. So can you tell us, so this works to me where safety comes in, because when you pasteurize something and you kind of sterilize it, you've now killed all of the good competition for any bad bacteria, and you have a greater chance of having the bad bacteria overgrow. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. When you sterilize milk or you pasteurize milk, you're providing a medium, an empty petri dish, if you will, for pathogenic bacteria to go hog wild. And that's what happens. You look on the CDC website, you look on the FDA website, and you Google up, and you find that you search for pasteurized milk outbreaks, and you will find literally hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people sickened by salmonella and E. coli and all kinds of different kinds of bacterium over the last 15 years. And they always blame it on raw milk, when in fact it was pasteurized milk that was contaminated by the milk that came from the factory farm. It was improperly pasteurized. So pasteurization is not the panacea to fix all of our problems. In fact, it is a Band-Aid that actually perpetuates the problem and makes it worse.
Mm. So what would happen if you, because I know on, as you mentioned earlier, in the conventional milk tank, we're talking 30% of the times there's one of these disease-causing microorganisms.
Correct.
But on your farm, and in the manure, and you can look in the drain, wherever, these bacteria aren't even present. They don't even exist. So how in your environment could they not exist?
Let me get very specific here. There have been never had a positive test for Listeria monocytogenes, Salmonella, or E. coli 015787, which is a specific species within, subspecies within the E. coli category of, or family of bacterium, which is a pathogen. E. coli is actually an essential bacteria in our bodies, and without it, we wouldn't be able to synthesize some very critical vitamins. But these three bacterium are generally considered to be the bad three in terms of making humans sick. Now, the interesting thing about that is that many of these, the E. coli 015787 didn't even exist until the late 1970s. And there's speculation whether it came about because of antibiotic resistance or GMO research, because it didn't even exist before then. So we've created some of these bad bugs now that are coming back to threaten only the immune-depressed. I mean, if I took some of these bugs into my body, it'd go through me like I wouldn't even know what happened. But the people that are having these sterile diets on antibiotics and cancer therapy, whatever it might be, that don't have a good diversity of bacteria, that don't have good fighting T-cell counts, that have AIDS, that have viruses, that have any number of things in their lives going on, guess what? They can be susceptible to just a few of these cells to make them sick or even kill them. So we do know that food safety is a big issue when it comes to artificially made milk. But if you take the milk from an environment like we have, and there are other dairymen doing the same thing in other parts of the country as well, it's just that they can't legally do it and sell it on a shelf. They have to have people come to the farm and buy it. But if you have the cows on a green grass pasture, allow them to migrate away from the manure, you allow them to have the fundamental rations that were designed over the millions of years the cows evolved, you don't give them something weird, you don't give them any antibiotics. Remember, a cow is just a fermentation vat. All she's doing is taking in food and fermenting it. Well, fermentation is a bacterial interaction. You give her antibiotics, guess what? You interrupt the ability to ferment, the ability for these good bacteria to work. You stop giving her hormones, which is horrible stress for her immune system. You put her out in the sunshine so she gets some sun on her back. She actually gets vitamin D being created properly in her body instead of under a big shade. And you start seeing a different milk. You start seeing pathogen-free manure. You don't find pathogens in our manure. Dr. Katerina Berg did a wonderful pathogen discovery study down here on our farm 4 years ago and found that there were no pathogens, human pathogens, no salmonella found in fresh raw manure. Now,
wow.
You put all that together, coupled with 40 million servings of no reported illness, coupled with 1,300 tests from the state of California, FDA, ourselves, independent labs, everybody and their brother's been in here testing us. They've never found a pathogen in the environment or in the milk or any of our milk products. You're talking about a biodiverse environment which does not support the growth of bad bacteria because there's so many good bacteria. A quote coming from one of our inspectors, God love him, he said, "I'll never find a bad bug here. There's too many good bugs." It's too dirty, quote unquote. And that's true because if you swab any surface anywhere, you always find good bacteria.
Wow.
And that's our friend. She's helping us to keep the bad bacteria out.
Can you had explained to me one time about the different bacterial counts out there and the 5,000 in raw milk versus the 20,000 that's allowed in a pasteurized versus what it starts with before. I think this is helpful because people think, oh, well, my pasteurized milk doesn't have any bacteria, but really it might have more, and what it started out with, I think they would be shocked, and it hasn't gone anywhere. It's just still in the milk, but it's dead. So can you explain
that's
that?
That's exactly correct, Julie. The milk you would go buy at a store, the pasteurized milk you would find at the store, and I'm not talking about UHT, the ultra-high temperature pasteurized. I'm talking about just regular pasteurized milk, has a living bacteria culture in it. Not all bacteria, not all viruses, not all molds, not all yeast are killed off in the temperature heating of raw milk to make it pasteurized. And there's a surviving bacteria. That's why it starts to fall apart within 28 days. It doesn't have an indefinite shelf life. The bacteria counts that are allowed in California for processed pasteurized milk is 15,000 living bacteria per milliliter of milk. We average between 1 and 5,000 depending on, you know, when and where you take the test. The bacteria analysis tests are not very good, by the way. And, you know, we may send in a sample of our milk and get a 1,000, a 7,000, and a 25,000 all in the same batch because the testing protocols are very poor when trying to determine these very, very slight differences between the raw milk bacteria counts. But they are very good at determining whether you're like 5,000 or 500,000 or 5,000 and 100,000. Now, in the raw milk coming off of a farm going to a pasteurization plant can have up to 50,000 in California, and in other states up to 100,000 or 80 to 100,000, including pathogens, okay? Now, our raw milk is between 1 in 5,000 count of good bacteria and never has a pathogen ever. That's quite different than 15,000 after pasteurization and 50 to 100,000 prior to pasteurization coming from other farms, including pathogens. So it's, I hope I'm not too confusing there, but we are a very low bacteria count and no pathogens versus high bacteria counts and pathogens in the other milk from the pasteurized. And the unique thing about that is pasteurization does not remove bacteria. It simply kills the ones that are present, or not all of them, but it kills most of them. As a result, the dead bacteria actually release what's called histamines. Those histamines can trigger asthma and allergies in our body. And that's why dairy products are some of the top most allergic foods, is because they have so many allergens and histamines, which trigger things like asthma and allergies.
So I want to talk about the safety thing in terms of the populations you always hear shouldn't have raw dairy products. In my opinion, are the ones that would benefit most from it, and these are pregnant women and young children.
Yes.
So I would love to hear your perspective, since you have contact with probably hundreds of consumers over time.
Yep.
I really would love to talk about this so that people can feel more confident in consuming this.
Give you a real brief background, and then we'll go right into that. On every one of our food labels, we have a little warning on it from the government that says, basically, this is a food that has a biodiversity of bacteria in it, which could be, you know, could kill you, basically. If you have an immune depression, if you're pregnant, if you're taking antibiotics, if you're young, old, whatever, you could die from this. It's a warning. All raw meats, all eggs, and all fresh juices, sushi bars, everybody that has unprocessed food, for the most part, has this warning on it. So we have good company there. But here's the problem. When we test our raw milk, we do not find those pathogens present. That kind of goes along the lines of that bad milk we're talking about, the raw milk coming from a factory farm environment, where they do find those pathogens. And that is where the FDA and the government has their regulatory laws applied. They don't have a lot of laws around what we're doing. All they have the laws around this other milk that has pathogens present. So we're having to use that label on our raw milk, although it shouldn't really be there. It shouldn't apply at all. But it is there because the government doesn't have a lot of rules around raw milk that's intended for human consumption. They have rules around raw milk intended for pasteurization. So we're kind of being the pioneering leader of this new industry, or this old industry that's being renewed again. Mm-hmm. We're kind of stuck in some hard places in terms of good regulation that's fair. And as a result, we have these really kind of onerous labeling stuff. But, you know, our consumers know that when they see that label, it's for real. And they actually won't buy it unless they do have that label on there, which is a certification that, in fact, this is a living whole food instead of processed to death.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of pregnant women and children, I mean, we know that it's got these great fatty acids for brain development and these, you know, vitamin A and B vitamins and all these things that are so important. And the absorption of the calcium and absorption of protein and all these things that this milk helps do.
Yep.
What do you say to people?
We hear mothers constantly call up and say, hey, my sister has this beautiful baby and she drank raw milk and I want to do it, but I'm pregnant and I'm really worried about what my pediatrician told me, to stay away from any kind of raw foods until you've given birth to your baby. We hear this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a matter of perspective. We have the naturopathic doctors would recommend strongly you never drink a pasteurized dairy product and you have as many good bacteria as possible. What they're worried about is Listeria. Listeria can cause an abortion in the first and second trimesters of a pregnancy. Well, if you don't have Listeria present, then I wouldn't worry about it. If there's Listeria present and you have immune depression, I would worry about it. Now, it's a matter of perspective. If you've tested your milk, which we test our milk here, we test several times a week for these pathogens and have never had one. We do a rapid test on the farm. The state does a test also. You understand that a lot of Listeria comes from silages that are fed. A lot of the Listerias come from creameries that have Listeria as a residual bacteria because of the sterilization chemicals that they use.
Mm.
So if you look at where we are, understand where we are, the Listeria is not an issue. There was a huge Listeria outbreak in the early 1980s from the Jalisco cheese incident that happened that killed 49 people. Well, that was a pasteurized milk. That was not a raw milk. That was a pasteurized milk cheese. But it was blamed on raw milk because it was so easy to blame it on raw milk, because guess what? Oh, if the pasteurizer failed, it must have been raw milk that caused the problem, because raw milk is what it is if it's not pasteurized. When in fact you go out and buy the most garbage milk out of the market and send it to a pasteurizer hoping to make cheap Mexican cheese, guess what? You could have some serious problems if your pasteurizer fails. And that's exactly what happened.
Mm.
So people get this stuff because the medical schools teach the doctors to say, hey, listen, don't let your moms have anything that's alive during pregnancy, because we're worried about Listeria.
Mm.
We have thousands of mothers every week drink our milk that want to make beautiful babies in California, and they're successful in doing so. So that's all I can say. It's a mom's choice.
And what about once the child is born, the child maybe can't breastfeed and needs milk, or when they're done breastfeeding, or, you know, they're going to introduce milk. There are also a lot of parents out there that feed raw milk to their young children as well.
Yes, absolutely. In 1893, Dr. Coit was the physician who actually put together the certified raw milk people back in the 1800s. And for literally until 1996, the certified raw milk was available in California, well, it wasn't California, but all over the country. It was physicians' milk. It was the pediatricians insisting that milk come from certified, clean cows and that milk go for babies. So there's a long, long history of the medical profession directing moms to only have raw milk go to their babies. Now, I was a paramedic for 16 years. My wife's a labor and delivery nurse. I'm a huge proponent of nursing that baby for 6-8 months at a minimum. Get that baby on raw milk from mama. After that, fine. Go to raw milk from a cow. It's great. If you can't do mama's milk, then I would go to a whey-based, a raw whey, which doesn't have casein in it, because casein is kind of hard for babies to digest. But the whey has all the other good proteins and all the other good probiotic nutrients and enzymes necessary for baby to thrive. Weston Price Foundation has a great recipe for making a whey-based baby recipe for baby food.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have the casein in it. And then after that period of time, I know Sally Fallon, she says that she couldn't nurse one of her babies, and she put them on Altadena raw milk within 2 weeks of delivery. So, you know, it's not like everybody has a problem digesting raw milk. We have kids around here at the dairy that are drinking raw milk from literally 3 weeks old, doing really well. So I don't know. It's everybody has their own little way of going about things, and all I can do is just act as a reference point, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, we've only got a few minutes left, but I just wanted to touch briefly on, for either Julie or you, this notion of humans drinking cow milk. Some people will tell me, vegans will argue, you know, we're not supposed to be drinking milk from a cow, yet clearly for generations or long time we have been, and there's all these great properties and relationships that we benefit from milk. So what's the deal with that?
I've heard that many times. And, you know, it's interesting. I don't want to be sarcastic here, but I'll give you the sarcastic response, and that is only discussion that we have when we're here in a first world country where we're fat and happy. Because Oprah Winfrey was able to identify just a few years ago that the one thing missing in a starving community in the middle of Africa or any country around the world was a cow or a goat. And when you put the cow or goat in the middle of the community, guess what? You started seeing the beginnings of nutrition. Starvation would end. The beginning of commerce. You could buy and sell and trade cheese and milk and butter back and forth. And you look at even when Christopher Columbus came to the first colonies in the United States, everybody starved or went back to Europe before the arrival of the first cows, and hence the stock exchange began, literally the stock exchange. And it's been the time throughout all history in the United States that if there wasn't a cow in the middle of the community suffered, and sometimes didn't exist at all because it needed the immune factors from that cow. So I would reach out to the vegans and the vegetarians and say, listen, there are raw animal fats in a palatable form. You don't have to go eat raw meat. To be able to get the butter fat and the fats and these necessary fats that are critical for support of our nerves and our nerve fibers, which are surrounded by these fats. These Schwann cells they're made up of cholesterols from these fats. And those that don't have a raw animal fat in their diet suffer tremendously. They're nervous wrecks, and they eat coffee and so on. They just end up being a nervous wreck. They get raw animal fats in their diet. It's like they just become sublime, literally, overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Within a week, they just calm down because their nerves are working.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really important to identify that this is, you know, we're not talking an ethical issue here. We're talking a biochemical issue and, a physiological issue with regards to, you know, how our bodies work and historically the relationship between, you know, humans and their environments and other animals and species on the planet.
Exactly.
Well, there is an ethical issue in that I don't want my animals treated the way conventional milk is treated, and that's one of the reasons that some vegetarians don't drink milk is actually because of the ethical treatment of the animal.
I don't blame them.
I don't either.
Blame them at all.
So for those people, they can rest assured that these are well taken care of cows in their normal, happy environment. How long do your cows live versus, you know, the 3.5 years of the conventional cow?
8 to 15 years, and they die of natural causes on the pasture. And when we die, we take a big scoop shovel and take them out and put them on compost pile and say a small blessing.
Mm.
So, you know, it's Mother Nature back to Mother Nature, nothing artificial here at all.
Wow. Well, Mark, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're awesome, and I'm so proud of you. Good job.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Wow. Now, the place to go for all kinds of detailed information about milk and raw milk products is organicpastures.com. At least that's the specific website for our guest today, Mark McAfee, founder of Organic Pastures, and they make and produce all sorts of raw dairy products, from regular milk to butter to colostrum to, which is actually
cheese. They make cheese,
right? Raw cheeses, and just absolutely yummy. And I think for me, Julie, the big thing here is just, you know, waking up and realizing how what's truly going on with this whole milk issue. And this is something that has been, you know, co-opted by big business, and something where, for the need of massive supply and economic profit, we have gone so far from the core, original, healthy item, which is milk, that works really well for our body, to something that's, you know, cheap, unethically produced, not very good for us, and has tremendous downsides that we could do many, many shows on with regards to what actually happens in the body after long-term exposure and drinking of pasteurized milk.
Absolutely. And in California, we are very lucky because there's two farms that produce this raw milk commercially, and we are one of the few states that allows raw dairy for commercial sale. I think there's maybe eight states total that allow it for retail sale. So in California or in the Bay Area, you can buy Organic Pastures and other raw milk products at Rainbow Grocery, Whole Foods Market, and a variety of other little local
foods, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. A variety of other small local stores. So we are very fortunate here to have great access to that. And what we didn't even talk about is how delicious it is. It is far more, I think, tasty than any milk that I've had before. Even people that I know that are very, very, very picky about their food, i.e. my mother-in-law, loves raw milk. So if you're thinking, yeah, it's healthy, but it must taste terrible, no, it's totally the opposite. It's really delicious.
So we implore you to learn more of the truth. If you enjoy milk, have any of your friends, tell them, listen to this show. Go to realitysandwichradio.com, download the show, give it a listen, inform yourself, and empower yourself to be happier and healthier.
Absolutely. And you can find more information on raw milk in general at a website called realmilk.com. You can also go to the Weston A. Price Foundation. You can also go to our website, which is healthfulliving.org. And if you go to the food and recipes section, we have a whole bunch of information on raw dairy in the Food Insights, as well as we have recipes, those recipes that he mentioned from the Nourishing Traditions cookbook on the formulas are also on our website in the recipes section. So you can find lots of information. We really encourage you, because, of course, there's the possibility of contamination from any food that you might eat, that we really just want everybody to be empowered, to feel confident, to do their own research, so that when people question them, they have a really good understanding of why they believe in this raw milk and why they're doing it. And I think you'll be really amazed and surprised to find out the wonderful benefits of raw milk. So you have been listening to Reality Sandwich on KPOO San Francisco, 89.5 FM. I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living.
And I'm Martin Matthews, a certified medical hypnotherapist with Healthful Living. We're on every Thursday at noon. Stay tuned now for Connecting the Dots, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.